Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to this week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. In this week's show, we are going to talk a little about the ADCC Costa Mesa Open. We're going to talk a little about the upcoming Brazilian Nationals, the Brasileiros. We're going to talk about and preview Sogi, Keith Krikorian versus Kenta Iwamoto. We're also going to recap the Emerald City 6 Invitational, the men's 135-pound champion, our title match, and bracket, and the women's 135-pound bracket. As always on the show, I'm your host, Maine, to my co-host,
Miranda.
Hey, Miranda.
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing good. We're doing the show remote because I essentially just got off of the travel from ADCC Open, and I am flying out in less than 24 hours now to go back to Denver. So timing-wise, we wanted to get the show out this week. Might be a little bit of an abbreviated show because it has been a big weekend. If you want to hear more about me at the ADCC Open, great event, probably talk about that in the outro of the podcast. But some fun stuff to cover this weekend. In news, I don't think we have a ton of news, Miranda. Is that right?
No, we don't have much going on.
Yeah,
that I'm aware of, at least.
Really? For news as far as like ADCC, this was the first the first major U.S. Open that ADCC ran. It was last minute as well on big news. ADCC is no longer going to be on Fight Pass. They are now moving back over to Flow. And the discussion was mainly because they want to stream all the opens, and Flow has infrastructure to be able to do that, and Flow is familiar with being able to do that, and it seems like that may or may not have been an issue with Fight Pass, because both the Mexico Open and the Canadian Open weren't streamed on Fight Pass, and so now ADCC is back on Flow, so you could watch all the action from this weekend on Flow. But that's a big shift because, again, the Fight Pass announcement was major. Them coming back to Flow for all of the Opens as well as all of the Trials and for the World Championships is pretty big news this week. So I think that was that caught a lot of people off guard. It was a pretty quick announcement, but really wanted to be able to broadcast this giant Open. I think the number was close to 1,400 competitors. And it was a one-day event. So it was, I think I judged matches for almost 13 hours straight for that event. So a lot of matches, really, really great turnout, really cool community. It's only the second time I've ever been to California. The only other time was I stopped over in LAX for a big trip once. But
I thought you guys were at ADCC, you and your wife, and it was in Long Beach.
That's the only other time was in 2019 for the World Championships. So ADCC has basically, I've gone out to California two times. The only two times have been for ADCC. I just thought that was kind of funny. But that is sort of the biggest news this week, is that, you know, the ADCC is moving back to Flow. There were some guys from Flow there doing some event coverage. There should be some interviews with like Big Dan and Gordon, a couple other folks there. Really big turnout. A lot of big names were at the Open. Big Dan took like 4 gold medals. He won the absolute. We'll talk about that in the later section of the show. But overall, just the level in California is super high, and it's really cool to see. And it was really cool to see people fly in for these, you know, for this Costa Mesa, this ADCC US Open. It was wild, and so it was cool to be a part of that, and that was a very cool experience. I don't think we have any other news this week.
No, I don't think so.
All right, so you want to move right into the recap section?
Did they use Flow Arena for the matches? Do you know?
I think so. Yeah.
I think that's the one of the other reasons that they decided to stay with them, is because Flow Arena, it's easy to find your matches, it's easy to see the brackets, and it's easy to know when you're going and how everything's operating.
Okay. Yeah.
So without adding something else in to fill that gap, it's probably one of the easiest.
It's already integrated there. Yeah, so they were using SmoothComp prior, and I like the interface for SmoothComp. Using Flow Arena, I had a lot of angry folks come up to me on the judges' table and have questions about it, so I'm not sure. I've never used it as a competitor. But day of.
The thing that confused me about it is, because it's set up for wrestling, when you, like, for me, I had a four-man bracket, and when I lost my first match, I went into a consolidation bracket, and that's not on the same page.
Yeah,
so I had to
the consolation brackets are in a separate page, and this was also double elimination, so there was a bunch of confusion that I hope will be ironed out in the future, but most of the folks kind of understood and were able to figure that out, especially by towards, you know, the end of the day, so that was good, but... Let's move into the recap. So Emerald City 6 Invitational happened. The event was initially, it was going to be a 16 man women's bracket and a 32 man or 16 woman bracket and a 32 man men's bracket, both in the 135 pound division. Ended up being 27 men and 8 women, I think, due to some dropouts.
Yes.
But really cool storyline here. One of the women that was in the finals versus Trinity Pond, Lauren Sears.
Yep.
She was like a late replacement.
Yeah, she was a super late replacement. I think they said she had less than 24 hours to be put in the bracket. And then on top of that, she is like a 115 as opposed to a 135. So she definitely was like a smaller competitor when it came to everybody.
Yeah. That's wild. But like, maybe in the finals.
On. Yeah. So... Yeah. I mean, good for her.
Mm-hmm. She had a good run. I remember I watched some of the earlier matches, too. She had a good round with Peyton Letcher and was able to get through Letcher, and I was extremely impressed she was able to do that. But, again, we talked about it last week. We thought and we were kind of going to get a similar bracket to what we got in Rise.
Yeah, and she armbarred Peyton Letcher in overtime, which, yeah. I mean, is something. I mean, it's not an easy task at all.
Yeah, so really impressed. I think we've seen Lauren, I haven't seen her in a bit here, but I remember seeing her, you mentioned it on the pre-show,
I saw her
in Onnit, like years ago.
Yeah, years ago there was a tournament called Onnit Invitational that was, they would do specific brackets and super fights, and I had a friend who got invited to it, and I went down with her when it happened in Alston. And I was there, and Lauren was in the, I want to say she was in the 115 bracket, and my friend was in the 35 bracket. And I remember just watching her matches, because she was a blue belt at the time. But
yeah, this would have been like, I remember covering this event on the show, this would have been like the first or second year, this would have been like 2018, right?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, so. And so let's talk about the women's final first, because it was a cool final. You knew this. I didn't know this, that Trinity Pond and Lauren had actually gone against each other before. So this is actually a rematch from EDCC, was it East Coast Trials?
East Coast Trials, yeah.
Yeah, for 2021, right?
Whatever the last one was. The last one.
Yeah, the most recent one. And so that match actually had a kind of a similar finish to... this match. So this match, Trinity Pond hits what we think is a knee bar. The commentary said it was a toe hold, but from our understanding and from watching it, again, you might be able to have the replay there. We were able to watch it. For us, it looked like a knee bar. Again, Trinity's hand placement could have done like a topside toe hold as well, or bottom side toe hold, but looked like a knee bar. In Lauren and Trinity's first match at Trials, you were talking about there was a kind of a similar finish there.
Yeah, it was similar. It was like a jumping leg attack. It's on the... When you watch it on Flow, you can't really... She kind of jumps, and when she jumps, she lands, and Lauren kind of comes up in front of the camera. So you can't really see exactly what she's hitting, but it's a quick tap. It's the same... And it's a lot of the same kind of movement. And if you watch Trinity, I mean, in most of her matches, she kind of... She has these kind of sneak attacks... Where, like, she just all of a sudden kind of jumps something on you. Like, she does it with her... She had that triangle a couple weeks ago on Ride.
Yep.
She had that triangle. And she had a triangle against... No, she didn't. She didn't have a triangle in this match. Lauren did. But she has, like, a crazy... Not crazy, but she has an ability to kind of go from just passing or doing something general to... hitting a sub and hitting a sub hard, you know, where you're definitely in trouble. And the other thing I noticed, which, I mean, it started in one of, I think it was her first match. I'm looking back. It was her first match. Trinity went against a girl whose last name was Iverson, and she had like a crazy leg lock at the very end of regulation on her, and Trinity was grimacing the entire time, and then they went to OT, and Trinity armbarred her in OT. But after that point, Trinity was wearing something on that foot.
I think there's an injury there.
And she was protecting that foot for the rest of the bat. Interesting.
Can hope she's not taking an injury here. So let's talk about the final match here, the finish. This was a really neat transition from Trinity. So Lauren's on the bottom. Lauren has like a knee shield in, like she's playing kind of a more rangy knee shield where her knee is in sort of the abs of Trinity, and Trinity's standing passing and pressuring in with like an inside knee cut. So she's trying to knee cut through and sort of underneath the leg, but instead of like trying to pop the knee that Lauren has up and over to knee cut, she's just sort of pressuring into it. And then Trinity does something really neat. She essentially does like a knee cut, kind of like a Toriando, where she knee cuts out, and then instead of going through, like you're going to end up with your knee in the bottom of their armpit when you drive your knee through to pass, she like Trinity steps completely out of the guard, but continues to sort of drive forward. Then she steps both her legs out and then steps almost into essentially reverse mount from the guard. It's a really big like outside step that kind of something we see Tynan do, where he just like, he's so athletic that he would just beat you with timing. He'll put your hips in one direction and he'll just step completely around you. Trinity Pond does something really similar here. And then she immediately jumps. And normally, when you're going for a knee bar from topside off of the knee cut, you'll scoop and grab the topside leg, the leg that's previously in your stomach there. But Trinity here, when she ends up in that reverse mount, she loops the lower leg, like the bottom leg, and then falls over, falls to her kind of her side, and finishes that knee bar. Like, that is not something we see frequently at all. And I was curious if you kind of saw something or thought, knew why she decided to go for the bottom leg versus traditionally that top leg. Is there anything you saw there? Because I couldn't really figure out why she had done that.
No, and I don't know either, because when I was watching it, I noticed she did, like, that top foot. I thought she was going to try to, like, Aoki lock the top
foot. Yeah, because Trinity reaches back a couple of times, like, gets a grip on the top side of Lauren's toes.
And pushes it into her, pushes it into her, like, into her chest. Which normally, like, in a situation, at least for myself, in a situation, I do that not to get the Aoki lock normally, but to get them to move that leg. Because they kick out of it, and then they kick past you.
Yeah, and that's a really good bait, because you'll push down, and if you push down hard enough, especially if you're really square of your hips, kind of like Trinity is, they will kick out to kick your hands off, and then you can counter. And so it's a great bait, because you don't really lose anything going for that Aoki lock on the top leg, but if they counter hard, you can pass off of their counter for the Aoki lock.
Yeah.
Or like an Esteema lock variation or something like that.
So I don't really know. Maybe it was just a convenient thing. You know, maybe that's the side that she likes to, you know, knee bar people on. I don't know.
The lower side. I think we've seen Trinity do it before, and I think I've commented this maybe on the show before. But it made me laugh, because traditionally you're always seeing people attack that top leg, but Pun ends up on that bottom leg and gets a tap, and it was a really great finish. It's just not something we traditionally see. I was so impressed with the speed that Trinity had to get all the way out of Lauren's guard and then make it all the way back across to center and like to reverse mount. Also, it was funny. Yeah. You don't tend to see a lot of reverse mount played for any length of time. I did another rules seminar with ADCC this weekend, and then in preparation to judge, I went through all the rules again and got everything together. Reverse mount is scored in ADCC. So I am curious if we're going to see athletes electing to pass and take reverse mount position more frequently now that ADCC is running these opens and that we are seeing people show up to these opens, you know, at the frequency that they are. And like this weekend was interesting, because there was a lot of like discussion and talk about, oh yeah, I'm doing this open to prep for trials. I'm doing this open to prep for the next ADCC event. Whereas previously in the United States, there weren't that many ADCC events that you could do, not at trials. And so it's interesting that there's a lot of people now using the event specifically to prep. But Trinity going to reverse mount, in my head after this weekend, I kind of went, oh, I wonder if that's a position that we're going to see used more of, because now, you know, traditionally like IBJJF and a lot of the rule sets, that doesn't score. But in ADCC, mount is mount. They don't care as long as the knees are down and 75% of the back is controlled. It's all mount. So it was just a little piece that I noted in this match of like, oh, I wonder if we're going to see a shift in meta where we're going to see more people passing instead of passing mounted straight. They'll end up passing to reverse mount, you know, at range. So it was just a thought.
On the same kind of side of things, it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's upsetting, but it's not very good. Well, I mean, for me, it's not the most preferable thing that for, at least for East Coast trials, it looks like the Open is going to be the day before East Coast trials.
Yeah. So we were talking about that too. Do you want to talk about that now or talk about that?
We can talk about it now. I don't care.
Right. So I kind of think that's good. So ADCC trials is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So like to finish the pun match first. Trinity Bonnet has a great finish. She is now the 135-pound champion for Sogi. Looked good.
Not Sogi.
Emerald City. We're going to preview Sogi here in a minute. Again, long day, guys. Looks very good. And some corrections. So we talked about Trinity like not knowing her age a couple weeks ago. High school senior. So when she graduates, she's going to split her time between where she currently is and down at Austin. So that's a correction. So I got her age wrong. So again, very young grappler, super exciting in the division. Extremely, I can't wait to see her at this upcoming trials because she's just like continually improving her game and, you know, looking great. So wasn't able to get it done on a rise, but gets it done here versus a very similar group of women. And again, the women's 135 division really has never looked better in grappling. Like it's, you know, there are some phenomenal talents there right now. So that's exciting. Let's kind of sequitur back before we get to the men's finals, talk about ADCC Open. I think running the Open the day before is going to be good because it'll get a lot of people that want to compete in the rule set that don't really have business doing trials but still want to compete there. And so I hope that, because we're seeing trials get bigger and bigger and bigger, like East Coast trials and West Coast trials. We had over 200 in the men's 66 and men's 77 divisions. And unfortunately, or fortunately, like a lot of those folks in those divisions, they're there to go have a match at trials. I don't think a lot of them have expectations that they can go and win the whole thing. I hope that the Open will push those competitors that want to go and have that experience into the Open and hopefully make it so the trials doesn't turn into like a 3-day event where athletes have to have 6 matches, you know, over each day over 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so it'll push for trials to be more of the guys that are in trials because they think they can win trials. And if you're looking to just get experience in the ADCC rule set, because prior to, you know, the Opens in the United States, there just wasn't a lot of opportunity to get experience in the ADCC rule set. So if you were like a blue belt or purple belt looking to make a statement and looking to like eventually go and win a trials, you had to do the trials earlier to even get that experience. So now with the Opens, I'm hoping that some of those guys that, or women and guys that are like less about it, that want the experience, can enter those and the trials can be, you know, can stay more reasonably sized for the next couple years before the sport continues to expand and those get, you know, absolutely insanely large. But okay, it'll be interesting. So yeah, the Open is, is it Friday or Thursday?
I think it's Friday.
Yeah, I thought it was Friday.
I want to say it was the day before.
Yep. So
when I looked at the dates and everything.
Yeah, there's one. May 13th as well in Denver.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff in Denver for me.
I'm already traveling too much. I can't do that one.
Yeah, I probably can't do it either because I've traveled from here to LA and then I stopped in Denver this morning to connecting flight back to Baltimore and then in 22 hours, I am going back to Denver for one FC for the weekend. And then the next weekend would be ADCC Open in Denver again. And it's just, it is not a level of travel that I would be able to do. We're also doing some commentary for Copa Virginia on the same date as well. So let's move into the men's final. This was, you have the names in front of you?
Yeah, it was Cameron Malott from Tom DeBlas's school versus Sebastian Overvides. He's a super young, when I say super young, I think he's 18. But he's also like the number 6 135er. At least his Instagram says he's the number 6 135er in the country. I don't know exactly where he gets that information from. But he's from Houston, Texas. He's very good. And the two of them actually saw each other at the ADCC Open that we were both at in Vegas last summer.
Yeah, the one that happened right before the World Championships, the one in September in Vegas that I also judged that. I didn't have their matches, but again, it's guys that have met up before. You're seeing a trend here, if you notice. People that are at the tops of these divisions tend to bump into each other a lot. We've seen it, you know, at the World Championship level for a long time, but now you're starting to see it on these, like, guys that are regional and national level where, you know, they may be geographically not located in the same places, but they're gunning for those same spots, they're entering those same tournaments, and running into each other with a great degree of frequency. The regulation of this match was, how would you describe Miranda?
It was a lot of back and forth, and a lot of, I would say,
not tentative, but both guys, for me at least, weren't looking. They were gonna shoot their shot for stuff, but no one was super willing to overextend in long exchanges.
True. So they would grab a submission, but they would let go of it as fast as they would grab it.
Yeah. It was a lot of like, hey, if I'm gonna be given this sub, I will absolutely take it, but I don't want to extend in protracted like scrambles. Like both guys seemed like they didn't want to engage in super, super long scrambles with each other. Again, maybe you're a little tired from the day, you've had overtime matches. Tactically it makes a lot of sense, but there was a couple of back takes here. Sam did a really good job defending the back takes, played off his back for a good portion of the match. Both guys were kind of playing towards the legs, but you could tell that unless somebody like really overcommitted, they were both playing a very tactical game to their strengths, which again, you don't end up in a finals of a bracket like this without doing that. But it was pretty clear for the majority of the match that they were gonna probably end up going to overtime.
And I mean, it might have benefited both of them to actually go against each other in overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, they might have known that. They might have known that was their best bet of, you know, or at least one of them knew that. Because they had went against each other before. Cameron had also won that match at the ADCC Open. So they at least had an idea of what the other one brought to the table. So my assumption is, you know, they played a conservative game so that they would then go into overtime, and then they would be able to have, like, the strength and the speed and everything to be able to kind of survive that.
You're not going to blow through all your gas and regulation and then deal with a really tough guy in overtime who's gonna start on your back. Both guys are definitely folks that you think, like, oh, yeah, they're going to start on the back. They're not going to take the arm bar.
I think this was the match where Cameron had some really, like, nasty rear naked chokes from behind.
Yeah.
I don't remember if this match or the one before. No, that was the one before. That was the Molly Womp victory that he had, which was the match before.
Yeah.
Was the one where he was, like, I mean, he was doing the full, like, your face, your whole face is your neck for a choke.
Everything above the neck is the neck.
And he was, I mean, yeah, he was cranking dude's face the entire time, and the dude decided to, like, stand up with his hands down instead of protecting his neck, and he just, like, grabbed, like, a rear naked choke standing, and I have no idea how this guy survived. He just kept on, like,
I was impressed with that because it was a good, he started bleeding at one point and, like, wiped the blood off, and they didn't stop, and he just kept going. It was a neat overtime match. Again, we've talked on the show openly. We're not the biggest fan of kind of the overtime format for a number of reasons, but I do appreciate. I can still appreciate a really good, tenacious overtime performance from either a defender or from the person on the back. You do get some neat, kind of very specific exchanges, especially because the body triangle. Guys can get to the body triangle immediately now, and so you're seeing some really unique defenses to that. But we don't see guys stand up frequently at all. It's a really, especially when you can't spike or slam, it's a really uncommon defense. I will say with the caveat that you see it at the lower weight classes. That guys at 135, you do see it more frequently than the bigger guys.
That is true. And the guy that I was speaking about, which wasn't over Vitas, which was the finals match, but the semifinals match, that was one of Esteban Martinez's training partners at ZR Team.
Oh, really?
So I was just like, well, he's really good at defense. I bet you that whole gym is just freaking baller in defense. Because
just dealing with Esteban Martinez constantly.
Yeah.
And trying to sub Esteban.
Esteban was early. He had a match earlier in, and he just lost. I forget. Like, it was something like 9 seconds of ride time.
Was it three or nine? It was very, very close.
It was something crazy. It might have been three, because that sounds familiar too.
I thought, but later the commentary said that it was 3 seconds. But again, it was less than 10 seconds. And so,
yeah.
And Emerald City Invitational, so they've modified their rules a little bit. We thought they were going to ADCC rules, but they've gone back to the EBI rule. They've maintained the EBI rules, and they've made a couple of modifications to it. They still use the 3 2-minute overtime system.
Yeah.
So we can, you know, you can have longer overtime matches. And so this finals, this men's 35 final match, goes all the way through the overtimes, and it is won by ride time.
Yeah.
But overall, interesting event. Again, any kind of other thoughts on the main event or the competitors there?
It was a great tournament. It was definitely a longer tournament. It was 5 hours.
Yeah, you have a 27-person bracket. Like, even at single elimination, it's just that extra round can definitely play long. And for me, I kind of had a problem when I was watching it figuring out exactly where in the bracket they were.
Yeah.
Like, and that's something that I struggled a bit to figure out. Okay, is this the final? Is this not the final? Like Trinity's match, in the final, it was. We knew there was a break before, and then I knew that there was we had men's finals, women's finals up next, but I wish there would have been like a graphic on the screen or something to indicate that that was a final, because when they finished at the end and they raised Trinity's hand, it wasn't really clear. If you knew in the broadcast, it was clear, but watching that match individually, which is kind of how initially I watched the event for the first time, it wasn't really clear that that was the final and Trinity was now the champion.
Yeah.
And so I wish there was like a little bit of a graphic or something there to make it a little more clear on the broadcast, because I think you struggled a little bit as well, figuring out exactly where in the card we were, especially with such a big men's bracket. It's really hard to keep a 16-man bracket straight.
And without knowing, like, I don't think, at least I watched the whole thing, and I don't recall them telling us at any point that it went from 32 to 27. When I realized that was actually happening was when they started saying that people were getting buys into round two. So I kind of realized that there were less gentlemen than had started, but it was, that part was kind of not explained that well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it ran well. It wasn't like they took a lot of time between matches. They kind of tried to run matches as fast as they could.
I love what Sam's doing up there. Again, I really wish that they would have made this shift over to ADCC rules. I'm not sure why they've elected to stay with the EBI rules, but I would love to see, especially in Nogi, more events. Again, after doing another 12, 13 hours of matches for ADCC this weekend, that format, it you get activity and you get a level of activity that I'm a big fan of. There are not a lot of matches that stall out or slow down even, because there's a lot of mechanism there to force the athletes to continue to engage and continue to look for the finish and look for positional dominance. I wish that more organizations would make that shift, but, you know, Emerald City.
And it was, for me, it definitely was a little weird because the in wrestling, the U.S. Open was this weekend in Vegas. And so I was watching those matches. Then after that, I watched these matches. And those matches, because it's wrestling and there's two rounds and they're two short rounds, like, they get it done. Like, they're, like, running like crazy people trying to kill each other and throw each other around. And then to go to something like this where it's, like, a lot more calm, it was definitely...
The juxtaposition was pretty... Yeah, I did the same thing with going from ADCC. And I refed a lot of kids' matches, which are 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And so kids can go for four. Like, there is no, they're not getting tired. They're not getting gassed. They're just, kids can gun it. Kids and juveniles can gun it for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And then, on the off chance there's no score, they go to two additional minutes. And the kids are hyped. The coaches get hyped. And they just go. And it's a sick, again, they can go up technically to 8 minutes. I didn't have a single match go to double overtime. It was just, you know, one overtime needed there. But 6 minute matches for the majority of the weekend. I think that is a really, really good length, and I like it. But overall, again, I love what the guys up at Emerald City are doing. It was a great tournament, super high level of guys. I just am curious to see if they decide to continue with the EBI rules or they do decide to make the change over to the ADCC rules. But, you know, love what those guys are doing and love the talent that they are showcasing up there in New York. So that's what we got for... we have one more thing. So the ADCC Costa Mesa Open, in the finals of the Absolute, which is like a paid bracket, we had Big Dan Manasuri, and Damon Ramos. And we've seen Damon Ramos look great at trials. He was in ADCC. Big Dan's on something else, man. He looked good. He hit, I couldn't tell, it looked kind of like an ankle lock win. So I was on the judges' side of that mat. And so the finish, and both those guys are real, real big guys, was on the other foot away from us. So I didn't get a chance to actually see exactly what the finish was, but it was a pretty quick leg lock victory for Big Dan. He got up. He was excited. Apparently, he took 4 golds this weekend. He took the gold last weekend at Canada. That's a dude that is on the ADCC grind and learning the rules. Gordon was there as well. I think he was coaching Big Dan. So it's, you know, those guys are hammering. Oliver Taza was there. Junior Ocasio was there. Barrett Yoshida won his division. There was so many other big names there. I spent other time on some different mats throughout the weekend, so I didn't get a chance to see a lot of them, but I was able to make it over for the Absolute Finals because that was the last match of the day. And again, super, super impressed with the changes that Big Dan is making to his game, and he is still so dangerous on the feet. We just saw a match with Sloan Clymer versus Ramos a month ago or so on Fight to Win for the main event.
Yeah.
And like we were impressed there with like the back and forth he had with Clymer. And we've watched Ramos before on trials and been really impressed with him. And a lot of guys at +99, you know, speak really highly of his game. But for Big Dan to go and continue to do what he has been doing, which is take another big dude, get him down, and then get to the feet and get the finish. I continue to be impressed by his ability to do that. And again, take 4 golds at ADCC in the Opens. That's, you know, Big Dan continues to be a dude to watch out for.
Yeah.
So, any other thoughts on the weekend, Miranda?
Not on that.
All right, so let's move into a match that I'm super amped to talk about. We in the previews now?
Yep, we're in previews.
All right, we have next weekend on Cinco de Mayo. I think it's technically actually the 6th, but Cinco de Mayo, my birthday. We have a match between Kenta Iwamoto and Keith Krikorian. So if you haven't, if you're not familiar with Kenta, we've talked about him. If you first time listen to the show, Kenta Iwamoto is the, I think, two-time Asian Trials champion for ADCC. He has very good wrestling that throws a lot of guys off. He is very active. He's very aggressive. He pushes for the finish. He's pretty dangerous in all areas. But the thing that's always stood out to us about Kenta is kind of the tenacity he has in the wrestling. We watched his match versus JT Torres in the World Championships. And we've talked about, like, was JT off? Was he not? He made JT work harder than we've seen JT work in a first round in a very long time. And he, you know, he forced JT to kind of dig deep to be able to have to take out Kenta in the first round of ADCC. But Kenta's been pretty active since then. Unfortunately, he does not have a BJ Heroes page, so I can't pull his record in more depth. But we saw him on Sogi.
I pulled his Flow Grappling page. Okay. Flow has him. The only match in 2023 they have him is his loss to William Tackett at Unrivaled.
Yeah, and that was a really good match. That was on Fight, I think. We watched that, and that whole card was great. Yeah.
And then he has him winning the Soji Pro welterweight bracket.
Took a win over Andrew Solano, Andrew Cockle in that bracket, as well as two other guys in the earlier rounds.
Yeah.
There, he had a really good run on Submission Only Series, and then he has that loss to JT Torres at ADCC, but again, AJT going into that match was the two-time defending ADCC champion. Only time possible was in three was because he had hurt his leg the week prior of ADCC 2017. So that kind of speaks to how good Kenta is. He's had definitely... Yeah. Some rough performances on these other events outside of ADCC. But man, if he shows up and he can wrestle, he is a force to be reckoned with for anyone. But Keith is kind of another dude.
Yeah. Is Kenta still down at B team, or was he only there for a
minute? I don't know.
I think he was only there for a minute, right?
I think he was there for a bit. I don't know where he is now. Kenta's Japanese. And we see him kind of, but he's a guy that travels a lot. He also fights MMA, but I don't know exactly where he is right now, but he does travel. He was at B team prior to ADCC, but I don't think that was a permanent move for him. I think it was temporary.
Okay.
Keith, we've talked about Keith for literally almost 6 years at this point. Has coming off a good win over Sam McNally at Grapplefest, Renika choke win. He has a referee decision, who's number 112, over Gabriel Souza. He has a great trials run, wins over Josh Cisneros at trials by heel hook, beat Damian Anderson on points, beat Mauricio Gomez by heel hook, beat Robert Deagle by heel hook, Elias Anderson by points. That's just the end of 2023. He had a rough couple matches against Mika Galvao on Polaris, where he got submitted on Polaris. But Keith has been a monster. Had a tough match against Ash Williams. I think that was Grapplefest as well.
It was. It was Grapplefest.
And that was a decision.
And then his most current win against at Polaris was that really fast sub.
No, that was Grapplefest.
That was Grapplefest.
Yeah, that was the Sam McNally one. That was like a minute and a half or something.
Yeah, it was fast.
And that was recent. So again, this is a fun match. So the dynamic of this match, I think both guys are going to stand for a while. I think Keith is more likely to pull here in this match, but it's Sogi, and we just saw Keith on Sogi on the last Sogi card, I think. He had a match. Yeah. Sogi tends to be a little bit of a smaller venue.
So they kind of hit into the walls.
Yeah.
And they play off the walls.
I think that will not play as much into Kenta's game, because Kenta tends to move guys around a lot. And Keith is more willing. Keith can absolutely do that, but he's more willing to sort of like stand in the pocket with you and move around, but he likes to be kind of right up near you, whereas Kenta will push you around with his wrestling. This is a rough match for Kenta, I think. I think Kenta actually has the skills to get it done, but Keith recently has shown, again, versus the Sam McNally match, another trials winner, European trials winner, subbed him, you know, very, very quickly.
And we've all kind of seen Keith kind of turn the corner and be that A-level competitor that, you know, we kind of always wanted to see him at. So I think, you know, Kenta does have it's going to be a rough match for Kenta, but I think it's possible for them both to win. My money's on Keith, but
I think overall the places that Keith is strong, he's going to be stronger. And I'm curious if Kenta can keep this on the feet for a long period of time, potentially how it plays out. But again, if we go to overtime, which is the format that Sogi uses, I think this is Keith. We've seen Kenta in Sogi, in submission only series in, you know, on back position before, but you know, Keith from the 10th Planet system is just so familiar. That's where he gets his start. Is just so familiar with that rule and with those games of how to hold the back and how to rack time up and how to control in those formats. Like, he is such a monster to deal with in those formats. But I just think that Keith will probably end up on the legs. Kenta, because he spent so much time at B team, is probably going to be able to deal with all that. And we saw him on submission only series be able to deal with a lot of that. But I think eventually, you know, Keith will push a pace in the regulation, kind of keep Kenta Iwamoto maybe a little on the defensive. And then I can see it being one regulation, but I do see this going to overtime. And I do see this probably being a ride time victory. But again, overtime, seeing either guy finish wouldn't surprise me. The Sogi format, the EBI style rules, I think make this a lot closer than another format would.
I think so too.
So, but again, I'm going to give the edge to Keith, recognizing that both guys could absolutely, you know, take it, especially in the format. But Keith has been on an absolute tear recently, on big events, and Kenta has looked really, really good, but it's been a little hot and cold here and there. So, and also because I'm not familiar with his training situation, I don't know who he's working with and, you know, what his prep is going to look like. So that's that match. Any kind of closing thoughts on that one? I'm amped for this. This will be fun. I'm super excited for this one.
Yeah, that'll be a fun card. It has some other matches on it. It looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, like at least 6 matches, 7 matches on the main card. So, and that's on Flow.
Yep.
So, and it's on May 6th. So it's the Cinco de Mayo event, but it's on May 6th.
Yeah, so it's the day after Cinco de Mayo. So I'll be flying. I think we'll be flying back on that day. So I'll catch that. I'll probably catch that on a replay. We'll be going to 1FC the day prior. So that'll be, I'm amped for that one. Any other thoughts on Sogi?
Yep, that's it.
All right, so moving in, we also have Brasileiros this weekend. Brasileiros is always like it's an event we sometimes cover in some depth, but overall, it's usually really, really hard to be able to cover, just with how it's filmed and a lot of other pieces. Miranda, you pulled up some names. We're not going to run through all of the brackets because for remote shows for us, that's really, really hard to do. When in person, it's a lot easier, but for remote, it's very difficult. So you pulled up a couple of names that you were seeing in bracket.
So normally we don't discuss like the random apps that we have that help us with our day, but there's one called WitchMat, which if you're a competitor for IBJJF, it's amazing because it keeps track of when everybody's going to compete and when and where. And it's fabulous. But anyway, so you can save people in it. And so my saved people that are in it that are doing Brazilian nationals, because I can't pronounce the other word. I can't say that. So we have Fabricio Andre. We have him going on the 6th, which is Sunday. Saturday.
Because 1FC is on the 5th. So I think all the people we have going for the black belts are going to start on the 6th, start on that Saturday.
Stu starting on the 7th. And my thought is that they're starting on the 7th probably because they have a bye.
Oh, okay.
Knowing who they are, they have a bye.
Yeah.
So Fabricio Andre, he's going. We have Masa Bastos.
Masa Bastos?
Yeah. Elizabeth Clay is going on the 6th. Weirdly enough, one of our friends is going within 20 minutes on the same mat as Elizabeth Clay.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, Chris and Elizabeth Clay are going like 15 minutes apart on the same mat, which
that's
is
funny.
Kind of weird that they're mixing the blue belts and the black belts, but you know, it's IBJJF.
Yeah.
And then we have Tainan Dalpra. Tainan Dalpra. Tainan. I can't say anything.
I don't know, it's been the bumper on the show for like 5 years now. If we muck up your name, just send us a text and be like, "Hey guys, at Grappling Rewind on Instagram, here's how you pronounce my name." We had so many people over the years help us out with that, and it's been we still to this day look for that feedback.
Yeah, well, he doesn't go until the 7th, but I'm thinking he's probably the first seed in his bracket.
I would be shocked. I mean, he's undefeated at IBJJF. Yeah, 55 or 56.
He's never had any points put against him.
No, is that real?
Yeah, I believe he hasn't had any points put against him.
I know he's undefeated. Undefeated as a black belt, 55 straight. Like, that is one of the wildest stats ever. So, yeah, I would assume that he has a bye into, like, the finals or something.
Yeah, so he doesn't go until the 7th, and then Devontae Johnson doesn't go until the 7th.
Oh, so Tainan was actually at the open for ADCC.
Oh, was he?
Because I had to talk to him a couple of times because AOJ, him, Cole, Guy Mendez were there. They had a lot of youth competitors on one of my mats. And so I had to talk to them a couple of times because they were, kind of non sequitur, they were very, very active because they had a lot of guys competing in the kids divisions and in the adult divisions. And they were moving their guys. They were trying to like move their guys up. If they were in one of the rooms, like, "Hey, he's here. Can we move his match so that he can go? So we can like, we can," they were trying to get through their brackets as quick as possible. Because they had guys, they were in multiple divisions that were like unrelated. And so they were frequently going, "Hey, do you have this match? Can we, you know, are both guys here? Can we run this so that we can, you know, get him to the other division so that we're not having to bounce between," cause there were two different rooms. So we had to bounce between two different rooms.
So Devontae Johnson's actually number 3. He does get a bye, but as I pulled up his bracket, something that I find interesting is, you know, Eric Muniz?
Yep.
Now he just went to Frateres? Frateres?
Frateres?
He just went to that team.
From Dream Art. He just left Dream Art.
Yeah. That is coming up as his school. And I've never seen IBJJF change affiliation or any of your shit on your paperwork that fast before in my life.
I mean, he's also one of the Muniz brothers. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if certain guys get a little faster
like, call
treatment.
Call them up and be like, "Hey, can you change this for me?" But Eric Muniz is number 1 in that bracket. But Devontae Johnson is number 3, but he does have a bye. So both those gentlemen don't go until Sunday. And then there's a bunch of other people, but I don't see anybody.
Yeah, it's Brazilia Arrows. It'll be fun. We'll probably catch some highlights and talk about a couple of the big matches. Probably definitely Dalper's matches. Again, it's not to be like a naysayer. Like, somebody at one day is going to beat Tainan Dalper in the gi. I'm phenomenally curious who that's going to be. Brazilia Arrows is always a funny event because a lot of guys, it's a weirdly tough tournament for unknown guys because a lot of guys can't get visas out of Brazil, and so Brazilia Arrows is essentially their worlds. And so you'll see like guys that we're not super familiar with that are monsters that are just stuck in Brazil do Brazilia Arrows and pick up big wins and win big divisions. We're like, "Who on earth is that guy?" It's like, "Oh, he's a guy that only competes in Brazil." And so it's always neat. And so you always kind of wonder, you know, for a guy like Tainan, who is just undefeated at black belt, is there a guy waiting in the wings in an event like Brazilia Arrows that we're not familiar with that might be able to take that first victory over him? Again, I doubt it. Tainan's looked amazing. But, you know, you don't stay undefeated forever. So it'll be, you know, if you're fighting top level competition for that many years, you don't stay undefeated forever. I'm just, for Brazilia Arrows, I'm always curious who that breakout guy is going to be in the black belt divisions for men and women that are like, "Oh yeah, this is someone to watch. They'll sort out their visa issues in a couple of years and then we'll see them on the international scale." But Brazilia Arrows is always really fun for that.
Yeah. So, well, just to kind of to explain it a little bit, he has 868 points in IBJJF World, and his number two has 128 points. He has 700 points than his number two.
Tynan has 700 points. He's a frequent competitor, but he also... So IBJJF rates the majors. That's crazy.
He has 868 points. He has 711 Grand Slam points. That's ridiculous. Oh, my God.
So almost all of his points are Grand Slam points, too. That's...
Yeah.
That's crazy. So, again, Tynan Dalper, look out for him at Brazilian Arrows. It will be a lot of fun. There's some other big names there. But, yeah, that's all we got this week coming up. There's some other events as well, but that's probably what we're going to end up covering next week. I fly out to... So, as far as... Let's move to the outro section. I flew in today from Denver, from L.A. and then Denver to Baltimore. And now I'm going to work tomorrow. And then tomorrow evening, I'm going to fly out back to Denver to hang out with some family, go see the guys at Nova Mente, do a seminar there with Danielle Kelly, and then see 1FC, Demetrius Johnson versus Morales for my birthday. And then also, I think Ty is on that card. I think, is Danielle Kelly also on that card?
I believe so. Yeah. Isn't what's it called on that card? Isn't he defending his 135 champion, Mikey?
Yeah, I think so too. Again, the card's moved a little bit, but I'm super excited for the card. That would be this week.
Yeah, it's Mikey versus Asma Al Marwai.
Yeah, Amariri. Osama, the guy from Atos.
Okay.
So he's a world champion. This is actually legitimately a really interesting match for Mikey Musumeci because Osama's really good. And he's an Atos guy. He's a Nogi world champion. I'm really curious to see how Mikey... This is going to be the first time that Mikey has faced like a straight-up world-level jiu-jitsu guy since Kleber. And it's just really... This, I think, could be a weirdly tough match for Musumeci. I think Mikey takes it, but Osama's a guy that's been... We've been watching for 2 years now that's consistently really, really impressed me. He's a rooster weight in the IBJJF.
Okay.
So he's probably going to be a little on the smaller side, but Mikey's also done rooster as well. He has to cut a little more to make rooster.
There's also the Ty Rotolo match versus...
I think Ty takes it over De Ritter.
Yeah,
I think he does. So we saw Galvao versus De Ritter. And Galvao kind of had a rough time. De Ritter's a big, strong dude, but I just think that Ty is going to be too much.
I think Ty's quicker, too. He has a lot more speed to him.
Look at a gassed Ty versus a guy like Margali or Penna. I think that both those guys are better have better grappling credentials than De Ritter. And I think that Ty will be able to get to the Ritter's back or get to his legs and finish. I think that's how the match is going to go. But I kind of foresee Ty getting to the Ritter's back. That's what I think is going to happen. I think the Ritter's going to be bigger than Ty, but I don't think it's going to matter because Ty is absolutely the second, the new wave of guys coming down the pipe that are going to be unstoppable. You don't take third at ADCC in the absolute without being a monster in grappling.
Yeah.
And then also on the card, we had Danielle Kelly versus who's she on?
So she's not on the card. I just looked at it. I have it up right now. She's not on the card. There's a guy named Aung Sang that's on the card. It's an MMA. He was local. He used to be Crazy 88 back in the day.
Yeah, he used to be there. When I actually moved down to Baltimore, he was one of the head guys there.
Yeah. He was one of their head instructors for a bit. And then he moved down to down Florida.
Yeah, I forget where he's now.
Yeah, one of the bigger fight teams down in Florida.
Yeah.
And I can't think what they're called. Oh, the Black Zillions. I think he was with them for a minute. I don't know if he's still with them. And then it was like they created somebody from the Black Zillions created like a kind of like a...
This is a Simon question. Simon would know.
They created like this weird organization, not a weird, but they created like this super team with like a bunch of high level guys, and they had their own like medical unit and they had their own like everything.
Yep.
So like almost kind of like not culty, but they kind of took care of themselves kind of deal.
Yeah. Super team.
He was there the last time I heard, but I haven't seen him since. So he's always a fun time to watch.
So this card also has Rotang on it, has Stamp Ferritex on it, has Sage Northcutt returning after, I think, three or four years, maybe 5 years, returning after a long time on this card. So I am absolutely amped for this card. I've been loving the 1FC, what they've been doing recently, and I cannot wait to get back on a plane in 20 hours and fly back to Denver and be very out of breath every time I have to train.
Well,
so that's my week. It's been a big week. Going to ADCC was phenomenal. It was cool. It's great. You know, I love working with ADCC and working for them. It's really cool. I love that, you know, they're training more staff, and it was cool to get a chance to train other referees and judges and, like, you know, assist that. And again, I can't wait to see what the other opens look like. I love the rule set, and I like that ADCC is making a big push and effort to get more and more people in the community trained to understand the rule set, because I think a lot of the fights that we had to have at the table and really to educate the community is going to fix, like, people not understanding that ADCC scores for post rear mount, for legs crossed, for feet inside, for body triangle, like all of those are scoring back positions for ADCC. And I think once people do more ADCC events and see that, you'll get less fights about those positions and, you know, fighting over control or fighting over the turtle and the neutral positions, people will become more familiar because the events are going to be more frequent. And then you're going to have a more educated community and fan and, you know, participant group. And it only kind of brings the sport up because people understand exactly what the criteria is. And we started to even see that by the end of the day, people, you know, you let coaches know, you let competitors know, hey, there's going to be a negative one. And, like, overall, it was great to be in that community and, you know, assist in educating people that were less familiar with the EDCC rule set. And for the most part, everyone was phenomenal, you know, letting guys know, hey, man, your fighter got a negative because they pulled during the points time. And they went, oh, okay, I didn't know that. That's good to know. Or, like, hey, it's not negative 2 points, it's only negative 1 point. Just being there to educate the coaches and the athletes and, like, give them that feedback and information for, like, hey, you know, you got taken down there because X, Y, and Z, or, like, giving them that feedback, because ADCC is much more vocal with their athletes and competitors. And I think it's a really good way to do business. And, you know, you get an informed community. You don't just stand there and not say anything. And I like the approach. So
yeah.
Overall.
No, I agree.
Yeah. It just feels much more, I felt able to give the coaches and the competitors the respect I think they deserved by being able, as the table, to, like, explain what was going on to them. If there was a confusion or a disagreement, like, we could let them know. And it wasn't just, this is how it is, we're done. It was, hey, this is what we are seeing. This is what we saw here. This is why it got scored or didn't get scored. Really, it's why it didn't get scored. It was most of the time what you were explaining. But, you know, overall, I think I was really, really happy with the community and really, really happy with all the questions we were able to answer about, you know, how the rules worked and where the organization is going. So it was awesome to be part of that. I can't wait to hopefully do more of those in the future. But it's going to push the level up for trials even higher. If you compete and you want to do an ADCC Open, I recommend it. I think they're great events.
Yeah, they're fun events.
Yeah, you've done a couple. You've done one.
Yeah, I'll be doing them when they come close. Say it that way. So
I got nothing else, Miranda. What do you got? Anything going on?
So I'm part of a school that just opened. We opened a brand new academy this weekend on Saturday, so that was fun. We had a big open mat. And I get to start teaching women and kids over the next couple days. So, you know, it'll be interesting.
That's good. That's a congratulations. That's awesome. That's awesome to hear.
I've taught kids before, so it shouldn't be that bad. But yeah, so I have that going on. That'll definitely be an extra thing to add into. And then we'll start getting ready and competing again all the time, like I used to. So. It's always a good thing, but that's about it. I don't think anything else happened.
Awesome. Well, yep. I got nothing else. So, as always in the show, I'm your host, Maine. Join my co-host,
Miranda.
And we have the Grappling Rewind to the Mat, whatever it is. Stay safe. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google Plus.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.